Welcome to That 80s Show, the dread I feel as I hit that little title track and realize I have nothing clever or funny to say.
That is unusual for you. I'm sure something will come to you eventually.
We'll see. How are you, Dory, in this week as we celebrate the 1980s?
Well, I'm glad Halloween's over because I think it's getting a bit much, actually.
Yeah. I mean, like, every costume is just like slutty something.
I don't have a problem with that.
Okay.
But I went to a Halloween party on the weekend, and these people must have spent thousands. Every inch of their garden had something in it.
The satanic panic. What would they have said? Would they have said about such things? This is That 80s Show. This week we're going to go around the world of the 1980s. Dory, do you have a nice movie for us?
I have an interesting movie. I enjoyed it.
Okay.
I'm hoping you've never heard of it.
Ooh.
Because what I did...
You've never heard of my movie.
I'm sure... Well, that's not unusual. What I did this week for my movie was I went to ChatGPT and I said...
Oh, dear.
Give me a list of the most obscure, weird, unusual movies from the 80s.
And then it said...
Most of them you've done on the show.
Can't let Palu down. I promised I would not divulge his secrets.
Legit, most of them you have done on the show. But there was one.
Oh.
That I had never heard of. I'm hoping you've never heard of.
Okay.
Watched it on YouTube.
Okay.
All will be revealed.
We are excited. Dory, your Halloweeny party, what did you go dressed as?
I went dressed... I was very boring. I hate dressing up, hey? I really hate it.
Wham.
Like, it feels like so much effort. No, I kind of did something very Halloweeny. I dressed in black and I got I got an Alice band with devil horns.
Yeah, okay.
And, you know, like... I got a little glow-in-the-dark trident thing, which was so small. I don't know. You would not be able to, like, poke anyone with it.
You were just invoking the wrath of the Heisgenoot. You were just like, fuck it.
I would have definitely been in the Heisgenoot.
Hey, you would have been front cover next to Steve Hoffmeyer's love child. You know,
latest love child.
Speaking of people from the 80s, he's popped up. I think he must have been in the Heisgenoot or something. Leon Schuster. We haven't heard from him in ages.
I also saw his name somewhere.
Yeah, he's like doing a couple of interviews and things like that.
He was like on his deathbed last year. Well, or the year before.
He was very ill. He looks good.
Okay.
He's got a hairpiece that I got to tell you. I hope I'm being shucksed. That is quite a hairpiece he's got going there.
Isn't there some sort of docy or something about him maybe that's out on Showmax or something?
Could be.
I don't have Showmax. I don't know.
I know he was like, there's an interview on CakeNet, and then I know he was in one of the Afrikaans magazines.
So it's CakeNet.
I've got to be honest with you, I'm kind of glad he got uncancelled because there was a stage where we were cancelling everybody.
I can't even remember what he did.
No, well, he blackfaced the shit out of everything.
Yeah, but that was
But to be fair, he everything faced.
Yes.
So, you know, he was like an equal opportunity offender.
Yeah.
You know, across everything. So there was a stage where everyone was like getting all like in their feels. Oh, Leon Schuster, we didn't realize how inherently racist he was. And it's like, well, he ripped off everybody, to be fair.
Look, I never found him funny. I'll be honest with you. I never enjoyed those movies. So I'm like not the right person to even judge. But I know people of all races enjoyed those movies.
Well, and this is at the time of the controversy. People were like, no, they're like, he went after everybody. I see all his stuff's like back on the streamers because there was a stage where they took it all off, but it's back on there. And it's like, listen, don't do blackface.
No, just don't.
Don't do blackface. It's like just, you know, we learn. Let's learn the hard way. Let's learn from Leon Schuster. But I'm glad he's back. Could do a little less with a hairpiece.
Yeah.
Dory, last week I made like a very throwaway comment. I said, did you know the guy who directed the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the first movie, also directed a Take On Me music video?
Right? I
just chucked it at you and kind of like, and I thought, hold on a second. That seems like something we should be talking about a lot more. So his name is Stephen Baron, right?
Yes.
And yes, in 1990, he comes to direct the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which is like, you know, one of my favorite movies of all time. I think seeing the Ninja Turtles come to life. Yes, he did direct music videos, Dory. Now, he's born in Dublin in 1956. His parents were actors, also in the film biz.
Mm-hmm.
And he starts directing music videos in 1979. Let me read his roll call of music videos he has directed.
Okay.
So he starts off by directing Don't You Want Me by the Human League.
Okay, I vaguely remember it.
Very angsty, very angsty, very fashion, very arty, walking into cameras. They're making a movie and then they're watching the movie.
I'm seeing red and black.
Yes, very arty.
Yes.
Michael Jackson sees it and goes, can you make my music video for Billie Jean?
Mm-hmm.
So he does Billie Jean. He says he was more excited about doing Human League. Because like Michael Jackson came. Yeah, and he's like, hey, I mean, because I suppose that's your first one, Human League.
Yeah.
So he's like, does, and Billie Jean's the one where Michael Jackson's walking down the street and the floor tiles light up.
Yeah.
Okay. He then goes to do music videos for, he does Burning Up for Madonna. Not a great song. Music. Okay. He's got a very definite style. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to post up all his music videos that he's done.
Okay.
You'll see his style straight away. Definite, very look, very specific look. Does for Bryan Adams, does some of 69 and Run to You.
Okay.
He does Electric Avenue and I Don't Want to Dance for Eddie Grant.
Okay.
He does Going Underground by The Jam. Of course, I said Don't You Want Me by The Human League. Baby Jane by Rod Stewart. He does freaking Money for Nothing for The Dire Straits. Now, you remember that. That was the first time they used like CGI animation in a music video. It had that like blocky plumber guy.
Yeah.
So he did that. He does Pale Shelter by Tears for Fears, Africa by Toto.
Ugh,
there is like a memeable scene in that where now Toto are one of like the yacht rock bands that they're great musicians, not great to look at,
mm-hmm.
and very weird looking guys. There's one funny scene where they spin the world globe and they're not showing the globe as we know it. It's like, well, the spin doesn't matter. But anyway, like iconic song, iconic music video.
Yeah.
And then he does The Sun Never Shines on TV for Aha and fucking Take On Me. I mean, Take On Me is a masterpiece music video.
It really is.
He just did all these music videos. That's what he did.
Did he conceptualize Take On Me?
He was the, he conceptualized, he was the director, he was part of the creative, he worked with the band. So Africa.
So why do we not speak about this?
Take On Me, Africa and Billie Jean have each got over 1 billion views on YouTube.
Sure.
How wild is that? And then, of course, not only does he go to do the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, he also directed the Coneheads.
Well, now that's a claim to fame.
I mean, what? Like, how have we been sleeping on Steve Barron?
Is he still around?
He is still alive, Stephen Barron. He is still alive, going well. He has actually the full list. God Thank You. So, okay, some of the songs we don't know, but he's done music videos for The Culture Club. He's done music videos for David Bowie, Def Leppard, Dire Straits, I mentioned, Dolly Parton, Fleetwood Mac, Heaven 17. He did quite a few more for Human League, Level 42, Nat Cole, and Natalie Cole and Nat King Cole. Wasn't that the one where...
Where they brought him back.
They brought him back?
Yes.
Like this guy, OMD, he's done a music video for them.
OMG.
Paul McCartney, Rod Stewart, Sheena Easton, Simple Minds.
Wait, which Simple Minds?
Promised You a Miracle.
Don't know it.
Styx, Tears for Fears, and ZZ Top.
I mean, I know the song, I don't know the video. Yes?
he did Rosanna and Stranger in Town for Toto. A Supertramp.
He must have been like the in-demand guy. Like everyone was like, I want this guy for my music
video. I reckon there must have been a stage on MTV where just like every, like they must have gone like full blocks of just playing his music videos. Those are all massive songs. And when you see some of the videos, you go, yeah, he's got a style. But then of course his greatest. I don't know. Teenage Mutant, quite funny because my favorite movie growing up, my favorite movie as a kid was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And my wife's favorite was Coneheads.
Really?
Bomp, bomp.
I can't believe her favorite Coneheads. I would never have guessed that.
I know, right? She loved it. She loved Coneheads.
That's so funny.
It's really stupid.
It's one of the stupidest movies ever.
And she loves Tainted Love because of it.
Oh, okay, I mean,
you cannot love Coneheads and not love Tainted Love.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think we've just found a new hero. Steve Barron. Love him. So on that 80 show, we got movies. We talk movies every week. And we're going to jump straight into it. Dori, what movie do you have for us this week?
Paolo, my movie is from 1986. It is described as American satirical musical comedy.
Oh boy, that's my... You know what? I got to tell you, my favorite genre of film is human satirical what?
American satirical musical comedy.
Jeez, I mean, that's so many. I love all those genres separately and just put them together. It's like having a turducken.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So I don't usually like musical things, but the difference is
yeah,
most of the music in this movie is by Talking Heads.
Wow, okay.
Because this movie is directed by and presented by David Byrne from Talking Heads.
Mm-hmm. Oh, this is going to stink.
No. It's so weird. It's called True Stories.
Okay.
Okay.
An anthology series?
The full title is True Stories, a film about a bunch of people in Virgil, Texas.
Right. Okay.
That's the full official title.
Right.
But everyone just says it's True Stories.
Okay.
It's kind of like mockumentary.
Uh-huh.
Where David Byrne is this guy who's traveling through this town. Okay, Virgil, Texas is a fictional town. It doesn't really exist.
Mm-hmm.
So they filmed it in various parts of Texas, various cities. And it's so weird and interesting and like so compelling to watch. It's got the weirdest characters. Let me read you, first of all, the cast, and then I'm going to tell you some of the characters.
Yes.
John Goodman is in this movie.
I saw that.
When he is younger and thinner, and he's actually amazing. Susie Kurtz, hilarious in this movie. I'll tell you her character now.
Yeah.
Spalding Gray, who you might not recognize, but quite a well-known.
Well, I see he's one of those guys that you see him in a lot, but you don't know who he is.
You don't know his name, exactly. So if we go to the Wikipedia page of True Stories and read the cast, this will give you an idea of how quirky and weird this movie is. David Byrne as the narrator, also as the lip syncer with moustache during the Wild Wild Life sequence. So if you know the Wild Wild Life music video by Talking Heads, it is literally from this movie,
right,
where a bunch of people are lip syncing to the song on stage. John Goodman's one of them.
How many of them? How many have moustaches? Just one?
No, there's a few.
Okay.
But I actually didn't recognize him, funnily enough. Okay. John Goodman as Louis Fine. Okay, that's his character. Then Susie Kurtz as Miss Rowling's The Lazy Woman.
Mm-hmm.
Now, The Lazy Woman, her character is a woman who never, ever, ever leaves her bed.
Oh, right.
Not because she's ill,
just
but because she's lazy. Rich.
Okay.
And she can.
Yeah.
So she is, the entire movie, she's in her bed and she's being served. She even has a little contraption that spoon feeds her food. So she doesn't even have to lift a piece of cutlery. Then there's, her character is, she's only known as the lying woman.
Right.
She is my favorite.
And that works. Oh, no. She's not the woman the lazy woman, the lying woman.
No, they're two different people.
Keep up, yeah.
But the lying woman is my favorite because she's just, like, she'll just randomly say something about a famous person and go, yeah. Or like there's a band playing on stage and she goes, yeah, they wanted me to be their lead singer. But, you know, my agent said I just can't commit at this point. Mm. And she just made out like she was it. She was the best at everything. She knew everyone.
I know a few people like that.
She's hilarious. She's
invented dogs.
My favorite. Because the way she does it as well, it's not like she's just so casual about it.
Yeah.
You know? Like she's like, oh, yeah, that guy, I'll tell you the thing about him. So she's my favorite character.
Right.
The basic story, so it's little vignettes of life in this town.
Okay.
But the main theme is that there is going to be, and I need to actually read it because I'm not going to get it right. There is going to be a celebration of the 150th anniversary of Texas's independence, and they're celebrating it, and the event is called Celebration of Specialness.
Right.
Yes.
And we should do that. That's what I feel like this every 45 minutes every week is. It's a celebration of the specialness of the 80s, not Texas. Yeah.
Oh, there's also Mr. Tucker.
Mm-hmm.
Who is the woman who never leaves her bed, her personal assistant, but he's also a voodoo practitioner. And he helps Louis find love because all Louis wants to do is find someone to marry and settle down with. It's quick. It's almost like David Lynch, but like much lighter.
Okay.
Because it's quirky, but it's not dark.
Right.
It's actually a very light.
Is it like, there's mockumentaries, or is like a whole bunch of scenes rather than a coherent story. It's all like leading up to the celebration.
Yeah, so like I said, little vignettes where it's just like little things happening here and there. And basically David Byrne, and he's in a cowboy hat the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
he's like walking through and he's meeting people, and then he like talks to the screen and he says so and so. So that's what's mockumentary about it, but it's more like you're just kind of peeping in on these people's lives mm-hmm. and seeing little things that's happening. And it's just him passing through these few days yeah. in this town. And oh my God, and there's this bizarre fashion show in a mall where people are wearing the most outrageous things you've ever seen.
Even for like, the '80s.
Even for
Talking Heads involvement.
For all time is the most outrageous things, like outfits made of grass.
Right.
Hilarious. It's really, really worth watching. It's less than an hour and a half on YouTube, called True Stories. It's just, and all the comments are like, I love this movie so much. And you can see why. It's just a feel good, bizarre, fun thing to do with an hour and 25 minutes of your life.
So just a silly movie. It's kind of like Dory. I mean, with the Talking Heads involvement, you dare say it's once in a lifetime. Okay. That landed like a fucking...
Sorry.
Jesus.
Yes, and a lot of Talking Heads songs, not all sung by them in the movie, uh-huh. but a lot. It's a cool soundtrack. Yeah. I mean, look, I'm not the biggest Talking Heads fan. But
No, I don't. Not the craziest. But yeah, listen, nice, great, good movie, Dory. Good me.
Thanks, ChatGPT.
It sounds too good.
Compared to yours.
Yeah, I think you see that's the key for me. I'd like pick up that movie, and I'd
you'd expect it to be worse.
I check it out. I go, oh, there's a bit too much credibility in that movie.
It's silly though. It's worth it.
Yeah,
trust me.
The Stories movie, True Stories, sounds like a treat. My movie most definitely is not a treat. Do you know who Michael Mann is?
Of course I know who Michael Mann
is. Right, who is Michael Mann?
The creator of Miami Vice.
Okay.
And other things, but primarily Miami
So,
Vice.
I mean, for the brosphere, Heat is one of his movies.
Yes.
Loads of others as well, but I mean, kind of, the movie I'm going to talk about today made him so disillusioned with movies, he decided to go into television and create Miami Vice. Okay. So
we are grateful to whatever movie you're about.
So this movie came out in 1983. He started on Miami Vice 1984. He's like, fuck it, fuck movies.
Okay.
Like, I'm doing TV now. He's, you know, Michael Mann, have you heard he's like so notoriously difficult that on Miami Vice, like what I'm going to tell you, I don't find the problem in it. He's so notoriously difficult that he personally had to approve every color T-shirt that everyone wore on Miami Vice. Personally had to approve it.
I don't have a problem with
like
this.
What do you remember about Miami Vice? What's the key?
Colors.
The colors. And he personally had to approve every color everybody wore.
It was an artwork from beginning to end.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's like, they say that like it's a bad thing. Okay.
Come on.
So the movie I'm going to talk to you about this week is, he had done The Thief in 1981. He's done Last of the Mohicans. He's done another movie that I want to do in a little while as an oddity. So he makes this movie in 1983. The movie is called The Keep.
The Keep.
The Keep. Okay.
Oh, you got to say it like that.
The Keep.
Okay.
No one actually ever says it like that. It's just I'm saying it like it. I don't know if this movie's sci-fi, thriller, horror, historical. Like, I can't tell you what this movie is. It's one of those movies that his first cut of it was 3 hours long.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, you got to cut it. And oh boy, do you start seeing how they've condensed 3 hours into like just over an hour and a bit.
Oh, okay.
So in 1941, in Romania, which is called the Carpathians then.
Yes.
And the Nazis find out that the Soviet Union's about to invade them. So now they're going to go put up a resistance, and they find this resistance in the small town. And there is a temple in the small town called The Keep, right? So the Nazis, being the Nazis, are going to be like, oh, fuck this. We're just going to take over everything here, right? So the people of the town tell them, you cannot go in there. It's sacred. You cannot. And the Nazis are like, fuck you. We're Nazis, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to give a shit. So they go in. Of course, there's all artifacts, silver, shiny things. And what do Nazis love doing?
Stealing.
Stealing. So they start stealing shit, right? What they don't realize is that these shiny things that they're stealing are artifacts that are keeping in a evil creature, right? Like a demonic, since the beginning of time, old creature that has been locked in there. His name is...
Come up with a better way?
His name is Molossar. Okay. Molossar has been locked in there. So now as the Nazis start removing this, Molossar starts being released. And he, of course, comes and kills the Nazis.
Okay.
And then he gets power from them. And then more and more Nazi soldiers, and he kills them and he gets power from them. So one of the priests says, listen, this guy's going to get out. The kind of like one Nazi with a bit of a conscience goes, okay, this is going to cause shit. If this is true, we're fucked. Mm. And they said, there's only one man that can actually help you with this. There's an old Jewish man in a concentration camp that understands the law of this, and you've got to go get him out. So they go and they get this Jewish doctor, Ian McKellen.
Oh.
Right? His first American.
Met Ian McKellen.
His first American movie.
Okay.
So him and his daughter now, and Ian McKellen's in a wheelchair. He's got like a degenerative muscle, a spinal disease. Him and his daughter now come to now because there's this ancient script that only he understands the language of.
Right.
So of course the Nazis see his daughter. Hey, let's sexually assault her.
Of course.
Again, Nazis.
Right.
So Molossar kills the Nazis, saves his daughter from sexual assault of the Nazis.
Mm.
Goes to Ian McKellen's character, heals him. No longer in a wheelchair, he walks. So he goes, right, I saved your daughter from the Nazis. I've made you walk. You got to get me out of here. Right?
Is it like a human thing?
He starts off as he's very much got a helmet on his head, red eyes.
Okay.
Humanoid-ish looking, but he transforms over time. One of the reasons he transforms over time is the original visual arts director died.
Okay.
And then Michael Mann left, and then nobody knew what this thing was supposed to look like.
Okay.
So they tried a backstory of like why he kept transforming. It's just because no one knew what the fuck he was supposed to look like.
Sounds
legit. Through it, at one point he looks like Vecna from Stranger Things. Like he okay. just, every time you see him, but so they say, no, it's because he gets power. And every time he gets power from people, he transforms. No, I think just nobody knew, no one was keeping track of what he looks like. So he's humanish. And at first he's like human size, but then he gets bigger and bigger and taller and scarier.
Okay, so right. Why does he want to be free? What is he going to do?
Because he's now convincing Ian McKellen, goes, listen, I know what's happening out there. The Nazis are going to fuck shit up. Let me out. I'm better than the Nazis. So Ian McKellen's like, yeah, but you are demonic. Like you are obviously some creature, Nazis or demons. Like, what do I do here?
Yeah.
But he goes, fuck, I was in a concentration camp. I fucking hate Nazis. So he's like in this dilemma.
Yeah.
Do I let this guy out? Somewhere just in the fucking middle of this movie appears the guy who put him away. To put Molossar centuries ago and locked him in the keep.
Centuries ago.
Molossar is like fucking centuries old. He's from the beginning of time.
So how is this guy around?
Because he's like, he's the keeper of Molossar. He's the guy who can control him. He only exists. But like out of fucking nowhere. Like Dory, out of nowhere.
Well, it probably was there in the first 3 hours.
To begin with, yeah. So now he's goes, oh no, this is bullshit. I got to get him back in the keep. So now he shows up. And then there's this epic final battle. To now put Molossar back in the keep of this guy who keeps him in the keep.
Yeah.
And then they lock, and then it's done. And Molossar, we realize he's never going to die. He just got to keep locked away. And then this guy is going to keep coming back. This guy's name is Glaken. Right?
Is he played by anyone we know?
Scott Glenn.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, Scott Glenn. Listen, there's huge actors in this movie. Right?
Amazing.
So Glaken comes and he locks Molossar away. And then Ian McKellen ends up back in the wheelchair. And then the movie kind of ends. And that's okay.
That's a bit of a letdown.
It is quite a bit of a letdown. Like I say, it's one of those movies, as you can see, lots of different people worked on it. 3 hour cut, then cut down. Do you want to hear what some of the people said? Like I told you.
Yeah.
So Tangerine Dream, you ever heard of them? They used to do a lot
I
of sound.
Do. They did Synthy, the soundtrack for
lots of soundtracks.
But specifically the one with Tom Cruise, where he's left alone. In the house. Oh, my God.
Oh, Risky Business.
Risky Business.
Steve Barron, by the way, directed Electric Dreams. Just going back to him.
Huh.
Both the movie and the fucking music video.
But then I spoke about him because I did the movie.
That's what I'm saying, Dory. He's just like so in everything. He's Mr. 80s. So Tangerine Dream, at some point somebody went, you know what? We've got Tangerine Dream. They scoring this whole movie. You know how we complain that Netflix is too loud? We can never hear the dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
That's this movie. All you ever hear is Tangerine Dream constantly. There is music under every scene, and it's them, and it's Synthy, and you can't hear it. People, luckily, if you watch it now, you're watching with subtitles, so you can follow.
Yeah.
In the original, there's no fucking way anybody heard what was going on. Like just music the whole time.
So how did you come across this movie?
Ian McKellen.
Right.
Michael Mann.
Right.
You know, so there's big names involved in this movie.
Enough, fair enough.
Right.
And then you're like, oh my God, how have I never seen this?
So like I say, Michael Mann was like, fuck this. I fucking hate Hollywood. I'm going to go do Miami Vice, mm-hmm. which we're all thankful for.
Very.
It's based on a novel, right? The original novel, the writer of the novel fucking hated it, wrote a foreword on it. He then did an official graphic novel to go, this is how I envisioned my story to look, not that abomination.
Mm.
He also then wrote a short story called Cuts, in which a writer puts a voodoo curse on a director who has mangled his work. Very subtle.
Not so.
Very subtle. Okay. Ian McKellen, he said it's one of his worst movie making experiences. Now think about how many movies he's made.
Yeah. I mean, he made Lord of the Rings.
He did Magneto. He did X. He's done everything.
Yeah.
You know what? This movie, 1983, still old. He's always been old. Ian McKellen has never been young.
Yeah, true.
You know? And he says he got told by Michael Mann that you're playing a Romanian, right? So your character is Romanian. He goes, great. I'm going to research Romania. I'm going to do the character. I'm going to do it. This is my big Hollywood thing. I'm going to show everyone I'm going to be Romanian. Arrives in. They go, you're from Chicago now.
Oh, no.
No, you're from Chicago.
How does a guy from Chicago end up in a concentration camp?
Dory.
Sorry, I should not ask
the
questions.
The Keep. So that is the movie, The Keep. Again, my favorite thing, when the biggest star out of it fucking hates it and wants it discredited, you gotta love it.
Okay. Well done.
True Stories and The Keep.
My movie's better, I promise.
No, Dory's is better. Oddities. We love oddities on
it's
that
really
80 show.
Cute.
If you had known this was happening on the 25th of October, 2025, you and I would definitely have gone. It was an event called Back to Hill Valley. So it's the 40th anniversary of Back to the Future. The original So Twin Pines, the original mall from Back to the Future, still exists. You can still go there.
Right.
And every year they have this like Back to the Future, Back to Twin Pines event. And this year was obviously the 40th anniversary.
Yeah.
They had cast and crew, none of the main cast.
No.
Some of the crew. But it's like a car show meets cosplay. So everyone who's got DeLoreans, 3,000 people showed up.
Yeah.
DeLoreans, Doc Brown's van, that big white van.
Oh my goodness.
All the different cars from all the Back to the Futures, all people showing up, 3,000 people to celebrate Back to the Future, all to raise money for Michael J. Fox's Parkinson's Foundation.
That is amazing.
That's amazing. The most amazing thing, Dory, I'm going to post this video up on that 80 show.
Yeah.
Essay.
The run.
Is the running of the terrorist.
I saw that. It's the best.
So now, it's amazing to see because it's like, holy shit, it wasn't a set. That is really a mall where they shot it.
Yes.
And it's great that they haven't destroyed the mall. What malls have been standing since 1985?
Sandton City East.
Looks
State.
Very different. Cresta. They look very different.
Yes, that's true. They
looks
look different.
The same.
Yeah.
Looks exactly the same. America's very oldish like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Like we always think America's modern. You go to America, it's like,
no,
things are quite old. There's a bit of more of a modern facade, but yeah, things are pretty much the same. There is a point where at night, I assume it must be like midnight or something, because to correlate to the time.
Yeah, I don't know.
In this, it is so funny. It's like you have the running of the bulls in Pamplona. You see a terrorist, a man with a rocket launcher on his shoulder, running, and then gets chased by hundreds and hundreds of people dressed as Marty McFly.
It's Marty McFly with the actual costume. And I mean, it's like all races, all genders,
everything.
All ages.
On skateboards.
I would love to do
it's like fucking Into the Spider-Verse where you see all these
so
different
funny.
Martys from different universes because they're everything. They're every kind of Marty you can imagine. And it is super, super funny. Some really great photos. Like, I mean, they have like a talent contest where everybody comes and performs their variation of Michael J. Fox performing Johnny B. Goode. All the cars. It looks fantastic.
It's
just
so
looks like
cool
a super
that, like,
fun thing.
There's so many people who still love it.
I know. 3,000 people showing up. I mean, that's just phenomenal.
And we would have been there if we could have.
Now, listen, we've promoted you guys. Can 10 of you listen to the show at least? At least 10. You know, we know you love it. Michael Jackson, from Michael J. Fox to Michael Jackson. Second mention for Michael Jackson in this week's show. You know, he's done the biopic, or they've done the biopic on his life.
No.
I told you about it. His nephew's playing him, right?
Yes.
So it's a little bit controversial because they're busy shooting it. And then they reach a point of where they're shooting. So it's all fine with his early life, but then they get to kind of his later life and the allegations. And then a lot of the victims have come and said, we don't want our story on screen, or probably if you're going to put our story on screen, you want to get paid.
Yeah, it's such a tricky one.
Right?
It's really tricky because, like, he's so massive, but it's so controversial.
It's so controversial. So there's like full 2 weeks of them shooting at the actual Neverland Ranch that two of the victims came and said, yeah, it still exists. Crazy. Apparently, it's such a drain on the family.
Crazy.
It's such a drain on the family because they've got to keep this thing maintained.
I know. Just get rid of it.
Yeah, it's got to be macabre.
Do people go and like visit it like they visit Graceland?
Graceland? I don't think it's that. I think it's because it's gross.
Yeah, you know.
It's definitely going to stink.
That's what I'm asking.
Yeah. And it's, oh.
I know.
Yeah.
We spoke last week about how smelly Jackson.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So what happened with the movie? They kind of did the first cut and go, okay, here's the problem. We got to cut out to you. Nobody's into this movie, right? What we're going to do is we're going to release part one, be so successful that then we'll just be able to raise money to do part two, right?
Okay.
The latest person to come out and just pour water on this is Paris Jackson, Michael Jackson's daughter.
Right.
Because they claim that, oh, no, we had her help and she contributed towards it and whatever. She said, I had zero fucking involvement,
yeah.
Right? I read the script. I told them stuff I liked, I didn't like. They didn't listen to me at all. I'm not involved in this.
Mm.
My brothers are not involved in this. This thing is a piece of shit. She just inherited $65 million, by the way, Paris Jackson.
She did?
Not bad. Not bad for being a Jackson.
Mm.
So now it's starting to go like, is this movie ever going to see the light of day? Because it's just getting caught up in bullshit and bullshit and bullshit. Is anything about Michael Jackson ever not controversial?
I think they should just kill it.
So to end off the show, two 80s truths and a lie, Dory.
Yay.
Stan Zimmerman, writer, director, actor, he wrote for both the Golden Girls and the Gilmore Girls. Number one.
Okay.
Number two, Dolph Lundgren was offered a part in Ghostbusters 2, but because he was studying a PhD at the time, he did not agree with the science and didn't want to look like an asshole. And number three, there's been a re-release of the Reebok Pump locally for one of the hip-hop persons. When they developed the Reebok Pump, the first time they brought in one of the big athletes to try it on, they pumped it up, exploded on his foot, sending bits all over the lab and forcing them to push back production for a couple of weeks, months.
Okay. They all sound like lies.
Two is true, one is a lie.
They all sound like lies. Okay. But I think the one that sounds most like a lie is the Dolph Lundgren one.
100%. Dolph Lundgren, 100% a lie. He was never offered a part in Ghostbusters 2. Yes, a man called Stan Zimmerman wrote both Golden Girls and Gilmore Girls. And I just like the congruency of that.
That's bizarre.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then, of course, Reebok Pump. Yeah, some rapper, could be a South African rapper. He works with Reebok and they said, which shoe do you want? He said, bring back the Reebok Pump. And he did.
Mm.
And then I found the story about it. So that is it.
Weird and random.
Weird and random. I love
it. Pretty much like our show.
Like our show, like our movies, like Michael Jackson. Sleeping on Stephen Barron since the 1980s. This has been That 80s Show. Everything we spoke about today can be found on That 80s Show essay, including the running of the terrorist. Imagine being chased by hundreds of Michael J. Foxes in the 80s.
I wouldn't say no.
What a dream. Thanks for joining me, Dory. Goodbye.
Bye.